15 seconds. Hey, Internet. So this is David Rovics, and I'm here with Paula DeAngelis. We're both, I'm in Portland, and she's in Adelaide, right?
Yes.
In Adelaide, Australia. And it's early in the morning for Paula, right? It's fairly early in the morning still, right? It's late afternoon here.
Not too bad.
Yeah, well, by musician standards, I guess. Musicians who don't have kids, it's early.
Yeah, that's right. Not for me. I'm one of those crazy people who gets up early. So
yeah, me too. But and we are this is the particular occasion of this broadcast is to talk about the latest endeavors of the Song News Network, which is a project that Paula and I both started now years ago, which has sort of morphed into various things. But how would you describe what we're doing here with the Song News Network? It's a variety of sub projects, really.
Yes. How I describe it has actually changed a few times over the years, but
oh, nice.
I think the easiest way is the way I am. A growing collection of topical songs. So songs related to current events or historical events or songs related to significant social movement themes, I suppose.
Seconds. You got cut off for a couple seconds there, but a growing collection of topical songs, or was there another part to it? Yeah.
A growing collection of topical songs, songs related to current events and or to historical events, or songs related to significant social themes. Yeah. And they're sort of a different category. They're more in the playlists. But we try to keep it as historical as possible. And when we set it up, that's what we agreed. That's what we decided, that we wanted to keep it journalistic, I suppose.
Yeah, that's so that the songs are topical, that they're really topical in terms of being about things that actually happen, more or less, or
yes,
things that are
that's
going
right.
On.
And you know, we started off talking about all these songs as protest songs. And that was because, I've still got your essay here somewhere. When you launched this whole project, it was in response to one of those Guardian articles, I think it was, that went, "Where are all the protest songs? There's no protest songs." Which
another one of those articles.
It jacked me off, she said. That was one of the things you took issue with when you wrote the essay and emailed everybody that you know who writes songs, which is a lot of people, and got them all to contribute. You know, so the whole thing's been a community-based project right from the start too. And this is partly because of Phil Oakes. I sort of felt like protest songs was too narrow a definition of what we were trying to do, and Phil, you know, has been a big part of the inspiration for this whole project, right?
Absolutely. And he rejected the term protest songs and embraced the term topical songs, right?
Yes, and which I think is a much better description. And he also described himself as a singing journalist at one stage or another. So, you know, I think if you, you know, expanding on Phil Oakes' legacy is kind of a big part of what we do. And obviously there's a lot of Phil Oakes songs in our collection.
So. Although Phil Oakes was by no means the first person to be writing songs about the news of the day. I mean, he was just part of a long tradition. Yeah.
Yeah,
would you say? He stands out for you because he was so good, but not because he founded any kind of tradition, right? He was nobody's grandfather.
Dorian, I think, wrestles with this issue at one stage or another. If you had a time machine, what would you go back and change? And my answer to that for several years now has been, I would go back in time and try and stop Phil Oakes committing suicide, because we needed him, you know. I think for both of us, he's been a very important influence on the whole approach and philosophy of what we're trying to do, and that's definitely part of it. And you know, the tagline for the Song News Network is "All the news that's fit to sing," and that's a Phil Oakes album, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah. I remember asking you when you wrote "All the news that's fit to sing," and you've got an album of your own entitled that.
Yeah, which actually has a title track, which is actually the song. There's actually a song called "All the news that's fit to sing," which Phil never wrote, you know.
That's right, and that's what you told me was it was you wanted to write the song that Phil never wrote. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so in it, and it's a great description of the database we're trying to build here. Yeah.
That's one of the things I thought that would be really cool with this idea of the Song News Network was for it to be a basically sort of more or less by invitation, but otherwise a sort of anarchically organized, by whatever people have to contribute, a sort of a feed of topical song related material, whether it's actually new songs or an essay or pictures or anything related, just vaguely or directly related to the idea of topical music or songs about history, songs about current events, and that other people, other songwriters who just had admin access to the Facebook page or to the other, whatever, other kinds of Tumblr, other kinds of feeds would be able to just post, cross-post. But it turns out that some of that, to some degree, that's cross-posting is easy enough, but like what I'm doing right now, what we're doing now at broadcasting on multiple platforms at the same time requires basically having some kind of a paid account with StreamYard or Restream or something like that. So I guess that right there kind of makes it less likely that my dream will be realized in any near term, because it's too much of a hurdle for people to jump over to have to get a paid account with Restream in order to do that. I mean, they're just not interested necessarily, I guess, or Song News Network doesn't have more than a few hundred likes on Facebook, so it's not enough of a temptation to get enough of a new audience, perhaps. But my hope is that it could grow somewhere on the internet so that it would be something people would want to join in on, creating content for it, so that it would then be a place that people might look to for topical song material rather than, you know, it doesn't exist.
That's all right. Yes, absolutely. And I suppose, yeah, that's definitely part of my aim, and I think it's been one of the reasons that I jumped on board with it is because you've got a great what the consultants call community of interest, I suppose, and so there's a lot of potential in it. There's a great collective, a great network of musicians kind of waiting to happen, but I think it's not an easy thing to implement. And you're very technologically literate. You're very comfortable with it. And you jumped on all of these things that, a long time before anybody else did in the music industry, you know? And, I think there's been two parts of that. And the format of the Song News Network has changed quite a lot. Because, you know, I'm I think in terms of notebooks and pens, right? That's, you know, up until I was well into my undergraduate career, I hand wrote all my essays, you know. I prefer books. You can see that.
Did your professors read your handwritten essays, or did you have to go get them typed up before you handed them?
No, they weren't allowed to object. It was still in that era where everything was very crossover, and so they were very careful not to discriminate against people who didn't have computers, and so you had the option of handing it in. So they might have objected to my handwriting, but they weren't allowed to officially. I still do most of my work with notebooks and pens, and it's taken me a long time to just learn to write essays straight onto a computer.
Oh, interesting. I can write songs and poems on a notebook much better than on a computer. But
yes,
for essays, I don't know. It never even occurred to me to try to write them on it with a notebook. My hand would seize up because there's just so many words involved with that compared to songwriting, where you're just sitting there thinking most of the time and actually writing very little by the time the song's done.
Yeah, but you touch type as well.
Yes, I do touch type. If you don't touch type, that's another matter. Then writing is that's true.
Right.
Yeah,
my partner, he can touch type,
and how so did he you can get through life being a historian and not touch typing? Is that? I mean, that's possible, right? But you're not a professor either. But you don't have somebody transcribing everything for you. Like if you were a tenured professor, or something, like then you'd have like a secretary, right? Then you could somehow afford to be a Luddite, but you're doing it anyway. Yes.
In which case all of this database management that I'm doing would have gone a lot faster. Yes.
Maybe. Yeah, I guess with database it's different with yeah, maybe you're right, actually.
All I'm saying is that a lot of the formats have changed because I've been trying to find a way to sort of create that effective community and that sort of forum. And all of the technologies have limitations in that way. But I think in recent months, what's been interesting about that, and all of these musicians who are all touring musicians, they're all working musicians, they all they rely on that face to you've been into it with many people on this
but
show.
They've all, like in the past few months with the pandemic, everybody has gotten into live streaming out of necessity, right? And many
yes,
people
absolutely.
Have gotten pretty good at it. Some people have avoided it still, but now they're in the minority, I'd say, probably.
But some people are doing really interesting things with it, and
yeah. Can you tell us about that? Because I don't know how many people are sitting in on those Emma's Revolution workshops that you've been sitting in on, but I know you've been attending many very interesting digital events, and with my three children and other tasks and whatever, somehow I never get around to anything like that online.
Yeah.
But what have been people doing? Can you maybe talk about that in a little bit of detail?
Sure. And I just came from the latest Learn an Emma's Revolution Song workshop, which have been taking place on Zoom. And Pat and Sandy from Emma's Revolution have done a great job of adapting the things that they do all the time to a digital format. And they utilize Zoom for that. And so we, for months now, have been every Sunday afternoon your time. There's a bunch of us, and we all log on to a Zoom room with that Pat and Sandy are hosting, and we learn one of their songs. So we've got all the chords and lyrics there posted for us the day before, and we're all sitting here in our spaces wherever they might be. We're all in the gallery in Zoom, so everybody can see it, and we're all muted, so it's kind of like singing in the shower, which is kind of liberating. And so Sandy and Pat teach us the song, and some people bring their guitars and we learn the harmony part, we learn the melody part, and then we put it all together. And we all sing it, and it's Pat and Sandy will tell us the story behind the song, why it was written and what the circumstances were. And that's, so there's a whole bunch of Song News Network material right there, right? Because Emma's Revolution, like you, singing journalists, a big part of what they do is go to significant events, go to protests, and which they can't do at the moment because of the lockdown. And the songs all come out of that. So what's happened is that it's this lovely community being built there, and the everybody's supporting each other through a very difficult time. And you know, I mean, the US is there's so much going on there at the moment, and everybody sort of finds it to be like a little healing space, I think, you know. And you know, we make jokes, and you know, so that's one. And they've also been teaching songwriting workshops that which I haven't been part of, but some of the people there are. And they do digital Unitarian Universalist services most Sundays as well. They do a different church all over the country every week.
So where they're the musical guest at a different Unitarian church service that's broadcast?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So all the Unitarian churches, they're broadcasting, I guess, now, and they're all having musical guests. Yeah. I didn't even occur to me that that was happening. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really... too bad in a way too, but it's also that's interesting.
Yeah, and I suppose this is what I mean, right? This, you know, I've been to live stream gigs of all kinds. There's a musician here in Australia whose name is Ash Grunwald, and he's in the collection too. He's a great kind of folk blues musician and very engaged in eco-activist politics and stuff like that. And what he did was set up a private link for 20 of his fans to come and help him do sound checks for rehearsal, because he was doing a live stream show outside of his studio. So he wanted some people hanging around on the end of the stream to check the sound and make sure that, you know, that he was getting the right sound. And it went on for hours. It was so much fun.
Oh, great.
Like, you know, if you're into that sort of thing, it's pretty nerdy, right? But everybody just really enjoyed it. And so, you know, that's another example. I've been to just some straight out broadcasts of concerts lately, and you know, so there's Frank Turner is, you know, dipping his toe in the water of socially distanced shows, you know, in England, and you know, he broadcasts those quite often. So
where he has some kind of an audience that's sitting far apart from each other, that kind of thing.
Yeah, everybody has their little seating pods. Or there's a bluegrass musician named Billy Strings, and he's been using drive-in venues. And so what it is, all the little spaces with the cars marked out, they've got little kind of pods with, you know, just three-sided walls. So you bring your family or your friends or whoever you're not social distancing from, and you go into the pod. And that was great. That worked out really well. I went to the live stream of that. It was so nice to hear an audience, you know, right, getting into it, you know, jumping up and down and cheering. You know, at one point, Billy Strings just went, "Oh, wow. How about that?" You know, applause. Know.
That's what I felt like singing at a protest a few weeks ago. It's like, wow, an audience. You know, this is crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think out of all of those experiments, you know, what's happening in the music industry is what always happens in the music industry, is that some kind of change or disaster strikes, or there's a technological change like moving from CDs to MP3s or whatever. And at first, musicians are, you know, they're impacted by that, right? They suffer from the effects of that. And then they find a way to overcome that and use it to make more art, to reach more people, to make more music. And all of this stuff, you know, now I'm, you know, here I am in Australia at the arse end of the world, right? And I would never get to see these things if they were live concerts. You know,
yeah, there's a real silver lining.
That's
to
right.
The pandemic. Yeah, but the although I would just point out that although musicians adapt and learn how to use the new technologies and make the best of them, they don't necessarily prosper or anything like that. You know, I mean, I mean, as it is in the United States, there are 43% or something as many people who declare on the census forms that they're actually professional musicians. And that's mm-hmm. that's between the 2000 and 2010 census. That's to say nothing of whatever's been going on in the past 10 years, which has been really cataclysmic. Yeah. But it's in terms of the the way different artists are doing this thing, where like you were talking about how some of the events that are that people do online are like more like a, like the sound check. It's like a smaller group of people. And I've often you know, people on CD Baby and other like indie music and the DIY music broadcast, they often talk about the different tiers of marketing your music, like in just to get kind of music industry geeky here for a moment, like, but I don't know, I never figured out how to really do that, like how I mean, have you seen it being done in a way that seems to work, like where you're just broadcasting or doing something with a more select group, and how that group gets somehow selected, or is it self-selected? Or I mean, I guess I was doing this open mic, hosting this open mic, which kind of had a certain flavor of that, where it was a self-selected group that was participating in it, you know, in terms of that, at least that aspect. But
you know, it's always going to be a self-selected group. You know, there's that Ash Grunwald rehearsal, you know, that people who, because he basically, what he did was sent an invitation out onto his email list, and he said the first 20 people who respond to me, you'll get the private link, right? And so, you know, the only people who were going to respond to that were going to be serious music nerds. Right? So in that way, it's kind of self-selecting, because everyone else is going to go, well, how boring is that? I don't want to sit around and watch a musician walk around past a microphone and tune his guitar and stuff, right? But, you know, for me, I like watching those processes, so, you know, I signed up for it. I think, yeah, I'm not sure how you, I mean, you know, marketing is a very strange beast, isn't it? All right. And you know, that's one thing you talk to musicians who get some fame, and they ask them how they did it, and they go, I don't know. Like, so much of it's luck. And I think Patreon is a really good alternative model.
Patreon, and, yeah, but I was thinking, like, not in terms of necessarily using these sort of different access to accessing different audiences in order to get famous, but like if you're already, say, whatever you're doing, you know, you got whatever you got going on as an artist in terms of your audience out there, and you know, and you want to be able to sort of give different elements of your audience what they might want in terms of you know, what you can offer as an artist, you know, but then trying to figure out what that is and how to target the particular audience that might be interested in something, as opposed to just the general audience, because there's something special like about doing a Zoom thing with just a selected bunch of people who are there for to learn something, like how to play a song, like what MS Revolution is doing a lot. That's rather fun. Than just like doing something like how to play a song and then broadcasting it for all your public networks to see, you know. Absolutely. And then whatever random comments are going to come in, you know, that have nothing to do with what you're talking about,
there's been a lot of that private private music lessons. A lot of people are doing that on Zoom. I think everybody's sort of experimenting. You know, Billy Bragg said right at the beginning of the lockdown, you know, yeah, I'm trying stuff on live stream. You look stupid, but everybody looks stupid. You know, I think audiences are the self part of the self-selection is people are forgiving of it, you know, because we all are struggling with it. And but as far as like how you market it wider, I'm not really sure, because I keep track of all these things by signing up to everybody's mailing list.
And then when you're into an artist, you tend to be into trying all those things that they're offering, whether it's Emma's Revolution or Frank Turner. Like, you just want to see what they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a big part of, I mean, you know, part of my interest and this is why the Song News Network comes into it, is one of my the social psychology of music, or maybe anthropology of music, what I'm interested in is the way that music connects us all and builds communities and builds you know, social movements, and the role of that's played. And I think that's it's kind of a neglected area of sociology or anthropology or something like that. I'm not sure which.
And it's playing,
you know,
that role.
I'm not sure which umbrella it fits in, because I'm a historian, so I think about everything. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it fits. I mean, I guess that would fit under various categories, right? I mean, sociology,
yeah, music,
anthropology,
therapy,
music, history. Mm-hmm. But you're seeing also definitely music and musicians managing to find a way to play the same role that they would normally be playing in the world online. Yeah.
Yes.
It seems to be.
That's right. And adapting to circumstances that are unique, in the sense that the entire arts industry, the entire creative industry everywhere has been affected by this. You know, and I, you know, so it's not just the artists, but the associated workers and you know, in Australia, for example, and you know, there's a lot of people in the arts industry here and who rely very heavily on festival based work, because you know, we love our outdoor festivals here and they're huge and there's a bunch of them, and they mostly got cancelled. Yeah. And so all of those people, and I think you pointed this out too, all of those people, their day jobs also dried up as well, the ones that keep them going in between gigs, you know. So I think there's a lot of music that's been coming out that is about the universality of that experience, and it's, you know, everybody's life changed, everybody's life turned upside down, you know,
would you say it's radicalizing a lot of musicians in a way? And if so, does it vary a lot depending on the country in terms of how they're becoming radicalized? Or I mean, one thing I was wondering is how are the broadcasts changing? Because I know you're keeping track of broadcasts from various countries. And as things are going over the time, I mean, whereas perhaps there was a point in maybe late March where basically much of the industrialized world was having a similar experience, perhaps for a few weeks, you know, it started rapidly changing between like the countries that could adapt and function, the functional states as opposed to the failed states, you know, and then, you know, so, I mean, in the US, I guess there's a lot more people who are probably a lot more concerned about like things like basic economic, like, you know, survival, as opposed to people talking about the finer aspects of epidemiology, which is like no longer of much interest when your home is burning and you can't afford the rent anyway, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's fair enough. And yeah, and I think from my perspective anyway, I think what happened was, when the lockdowns first started happening, and they started happening here in March, and which you know because you had to flee the country.
Yeah, it was the same most places, I think, just before St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. So there was several months there where you weren't crisis relief. You know, people like there's an Australian organisation called Support Act that provide crisis relief for musicians and people working in the music industry. And, you know, all of a sudden they had a lot to deal with, right? And so you were only hearing from that musicians were doing benefit gigs on Instagram. There was this whole thing going on for them. every weekend they'd round up a bunch of musicians and do an Instagram show as a fundraiser and stuff like that. And then after a couple, what I found interesting was all of the visual artists or writers that I know were really happy because all of a sudden they could just stay home and write or paint. Nobody mm-hmm. was bothering them anymore. They were expected to be left alone, and they had so much more time to make stuff, right? But, you know, the performing artists I know went through a much more difficult kind of process of having to, you know, recast their entire, like, I mean, this is, you know, this is what Bobette said in the interview with you. It takes a long time to book tours. You know, you put in months and months and months of work, and then it all goes down the drain, and you can't move on the next one because everything's so up in the air. So I think there was a sort of period of time where there was no, we weren't getting any music at all, and then we got a bunch of stuff that people had done in their own, you know, Dave Rawlings and Gillian Welch have done this album, which is all covers, because they were stuck at home and they had to make music or go crazy, I suspect. I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
And so now we've got, you know, there's and people have started writing songs about being in lockdown, and those things have started coming out now. And then when the Black Lives Matter movement took off and all of these rebellions started all over the United States, yeah, the focus has definitely shifted. And there's been songs coming out about that stuff immediately, straight away. Yeah. People didn't have to think about that adjustment, obviously, you know.
So in terms of the songs that you've been adding to the collection on a regular basis, how would you say a lot of them are songs about recent events? Quite a few of them, or is it mostly? Yeah.
Yeah. There is, like, my backlog is insane. There is so many new songs being written around, you know, topics of racial injustice and the police, and you know, there's you know, I've got some of those kinds of songs up on our, so we have a YouTube channel, everybody, and I've got quite a few playlists up on there, all our big thematic playlists and stuff. But when the movement kicked off after George Floyd's murder, I did a playlist there, which was topical songs from all of our the Black American musicians in the collection. But there's been just, you know, because it's been such an enormous public issue, man, everyone's been jumping in and writing songs and doing what they can. And, you know, you've probably seen Naomi Osaka at the tennis.
All the different masks, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And because there's been so much publicity because of the basketball players' strike and all that sort of stuff, there's heaps. And heaps, and it's not. I haven't even had a chance to put it in the collection. You know what I mean? At the moment, I'm sort of holding down my own day job and all that kind of stuff. And but it's there. There's a lot. Yeah. And then of course, other thing I went to this morning was a show again on Zoom hosted by Emma's Revolution. They've got a show going called Sing Vote Sing, and it had a number of different performers on it, who, you know, handed the baton on to each other. But that was the focus of it. They did a song, and then they said, this is an organization that you can support that's helping with this whole project. So, you know, and then just recently, of course, the entire world's, you know, we're all watching that stuff, you know.
Oh, yeah. So many things that the entire world is all of a sudden watching. The mm-hmm. dramas. I mean, what they get good ratings from Trump, as Trump is so fond of saying. Yeah.
And that's the thing about that is, and this is, you know, and I think this is a thing to watch out for, is it's a very useful, Trump's an extremely useful distraction. You know, and there's some stuff going on here in Australia that's about this. And while we're all neatly distracted by what's going on, our government over here is just quietly reinstating their neoliberal agenda. You know, they managed to make it look like they might have been a little Keynesian there for a while, you know, and they like actually, you know, putting in, you know, they've added a supplement to our unemployment benefits, and they started a program where businesses were supposed to be able to keep paying wages during the lockdown and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, now we're getting the, oh, no, well, we need a gas-led recovery. You know, the economy is much more important. We've got to open up the economy, all that sort of stuff. You know, Victoria is still in a lockdown, and they've handled it very well. But the Premier has been under enormous pressure to not do it, because it does shut down the economy. You know, so, you know, it's a very handy distraction to have all that stuff going on. And there's more design, you know, disaster after disaster, Ruth Bader Ginsburg dying, you know, all of that sort of. But, you know, I try to look at what people on the ground are doing, saying, and musicians, you know, look at those same kinds of people. And so, you know, I think, you know, there's always a bit of a lag, but the songs will be coming.
Right. I mean, during the time that I was running that open mic, which I want to get back to doing from under the auspices of Song News Network and through the website and stuff, it was really quite something with musicians of all sorts of levels of ability and stuff who were writing all kinds of great songs about very current events. I mean, that's always been my experience running open mics, is people all write all kinds of great stuff that's about very, you know, that's very topical, you know, unless they're trying to get really successful at the craft, at the business end of music, then they stop writing so much topical stuff, you know, because they're trying to emulate the successful ones. But I wonder,
and that's another self-selecting thing, because open mics are everybody's, you know, you sort of go with those on the understanding that you might be doing a work in progress here, and that you want to try it out on an audience and all that sort of stuff. And so it's like the Zoom experiments and that kind of thing. Everybody's more forgiving because we know you're trying something new. So, so that's nice. And that creates nice communities everywhere, I think. Yeah.
So songnewsnetwork.org. It's a website now, which was very exciting. Yeah. Somehow it makes me feel so like established and real, you know. But what is you mentioned YouTube, and there's what I'm usually contributing to is the Facebook page, just because it's easy, and I'm always posting on Facebook for better or for worse anyway. Mm-hmm. But we're active in what kinds of different platforms? Can you run through some of the different ways people can plug into it?
Mm-hmm. The main one we have at the moment, the most up-to-date one, is it's a Google Calendar. And you can access all of these things through the website. I've put links to them all up on the website, which is right there, songnewsnetwork.org. And so there's a calendar. So you can if you use Google Calendar yourself, you can share the calendar, like you can put the calendar into your own system, and then you can just use the search box. So if you want to look for a particular song or a particular musician or anything like that, you just put it in and then it'll all come up in a list for you. That's the easiest way. We also have a map. It's a Song News Network map, and it's almost up to date. And that's a Google map, like the kinds of one that you get up in your app when you're trying to work out where to go. And you can look at any song in terms of where it's, so the place markers are all where the events described in the song happened. So they're all geographical locations, and the blue pins are all David Rovick songs. And the red pins are everybody else's. So there's a lot of both kinds of pins. and I also have set up a YouTube channel, Song News Network, once again, and it's got the wonderful logos that we've had designed for us by various great graphic designers. Yeah. Sorry, that we were pretty easy to recognize that note, the note with the matchstick flame, all of that stuff. And the YouTube channel has all of the playlists that I've created. And so they tend to be around, say, for example, a UN, you know, the Day of the Refugee or Solidarity with Indigenous People. It's World Peace Day tomorrow. There's a playlist that's actually up on the Facebook page at the moment. I shared it to the Facebook page. So it has all of those created playlists that I've put together. And it also, I tend to save albums and songs that I come across that deal with, you know, music and history in some fashion. It's amazing how many history concept albums there are out there. So when I find them, I put them on. Great. So,
And Spotify, is that, are we doing stuff on Spotify playlists as well?
I was using Spotify playlists for a while, but they have some limitations because you can't put decent descriptions in stuff like that. So I've tended to stick with the YouTube channel because then the playlists themselves are more adaptable, and because I can put a description in that everybody can see, whereas with Spotify, unless you have a premium account, you can't see all that stuff. So when I first started doing this, I wanted to put everything on all the social media, right, everywhere. But it's way too much work, and so I've had to narrow it down. We had a Tumblr blog for a while, but it was not sort of being used sufficiently for me to justify it, and I love Tumblr. I really like it as a platform, but
people just don't use it with they use other things.
That's right. And so I sort of narrowed it down to the YouTube channel, and I've kept the Facebook page up. And we have a Twitter account, which, again, you use quite a lot, I think. And that when I do posts, things get reposted automatically to Twitter. So you can follow it that way as well. What I'm planning on doing is actually, I'm going to do two things, because at the moment we've got like a huge database there, and there's thousands of songs, and it just kind of all sits there in a database, which, you know, I like personally because I like databases. But there's no, you know, where do you start if you don't really know what you're looking for? So part of the idea behind launching this particular show was to be, what I'd like to do is do some sort of collection guide shows, I suppose. So I'm gonna pick out some things that are worth talking about and just do some introductions or talk to people about their, you know, I've got a lot of friends who are musicians sometimes, but also scholars, and they all have very, you know, I've got a friend in Canada, and she's doing her thesis on the music of the industrial workers of the world.
And great.
Didn't Rich say about that. So, you know, I'd like to do a show about music during the pandemic. I'm writing an article about that, about music produced during and about COVID-19. I'm doing an article for a magazine for that. And so I thought I might, you know, I can do a show on that kind of thing. And so, you know, basically my plan is to talk about whatever I find interesting, as long as it relates to the collection.
How would you, I mean, with thousands of songs, and these are all songs that you've actually had a chance, I think both, and in most cases, both of us have at least given them some kind of a listen, but you've, these are songs you've checked out and you've heard about somehow or another. And how have you categorized them in terms of, like, have you, in terms of the archive, is it categorized in any particular way at this point, when, in terms of all the other, yeah, how, how, By genre or?
Well, no, the songs are all filed technically under the date of the event.
Okay. Like each one of these songs is associated with an actual event.
Yeah, it's all calendar based. I mean, that's the way I've done it. That's the way.
Or a UN
day. Because
that's
the way you set it up initially.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just astounded that there's that many songs at this point. I don't know. Somehow it ran away with me. I didn't realize we were into the thousands now. Excellent.
Probably. Yeah. I know. I'm not sure I've actually added up all the numbers, but there's like between 60 and 100 songs every month. At least, and like right, a third of them are yours. but my backlog is, on Spotify, I've got this playlist, which is just for my own reference, where whenever I come across a song that sounds like vaguely topical that I like, I will put it in there so that I can go back to it later and actually enter it into the calendar. And there are 300 or 400 songs on that. And quite a few of them are just a representative of the artist so that I can go through their whole collection, put all the other songs in. Right. But, it's a lot of work. But because if you think of it in the broadest possible way, all musicians write topical songs, at least some topical songs.
Yeah.
There's very few musicians that not at no point in their lives write a song about an experience or something that's happened to them or
even if it's just like a song about your grandmother. I mean, that's topical. It's about grandmother or grandmothers and it's,
And that's right. And, I have Mother's Day entries in the calendar, and so, Professor D wrote a great song to his mother. There's a couple, right? Music is about documenting human experience, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've got a playlist on YouTube, and this is coming up in October. It's World Mental Health Day in October. And that's a huge playlist. That's probably one of my longest playlists because musicians and especially now musicians write about mental health issues all the time. That's one of the ways they connect to us and share those experiences, and I know for myself that there are so many songs about anxiety that I relate to,
Yeah, absolutely.
That are necessary for me to know that my experiences are being reflected in that way. So
if we included poetry in addition to songs, then we'd have five times as many songs about mental health. I mean, poems, because the poets write about that even more. Yeah.
There are a lot of poems in the collection already. Uh-huh. Chris Chandler's in there and that's, his poetry, but Tiller the Stockbroker does poetry. You've got some poems in there. I mean, I find a lot of songwriters do write poems as well. Yeah. So, and that's it doesn't have music, but it's a music of words. Personally, I feel that it should be included.
Absolutely. And with the rise of, I think they're talking about like anxiety and depression during the pandemic has like tripled in the US and probably varies. It's not as bad in countries that have functional governments, but I'm sure the isolation is just shitty for everybody anyway. But I mean,
it's more personal in other countries. Yeah.
Have you? It's more personal, the personal struggle of isolation rather than the over that plus the wildfires plus the failed state. But you've noticed that generally been in terms of the material people are producing, is there's a lot of more stuff about that experience of isolation and
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's a wonderful Australian songwriter named Darren Hanlon, one of the best we have, which is pretty good. We got a lot of good ones. He recently produced a song called We All Cope in Different Ways, and he's a contributor to the collection as well. He's written some awesome songs about Australian history. And it's a great song, and everybody I play it to goes, oh yeah, get that. Right. And it's about the process of becoming this strange little, what does he call it? Antisocial overthinker, because you're inside your own head all the time. And that, you know, that's very scary. And most people don't get that sort of space for self-reflection. You know, most people don't want it, and they avoid it, and they do what they can to avoid it. And we haven't been able to. So, yeah, that's, you know, on top of things like working from home all of a sudden, homeschooling all of a sudden, you know.
Has that been a big theme? What have been other overarching themes? Has homeschooling and dealing with kids who are stuck at home been a big one? I imagine a lot of songwriters are also parents.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of working musicians, I think, have had similar experience to you, is that they're not missing big chunks of their kids' development now, right? So that's cool. You know, and I've got a friend who works for Fujitsu, and he said, you know, in Japan, everybody's working from home and they really like it because they get to see their kid. Well, they don't have to deal with, you know, Tokyo public transport, but also they, you know, have this relationship with their kids now, and, you know. So, I think that that's been a nice thing. But I do have a lot of friends who are simultaneously adjusting to working from home and trying to homeschool their kids at the same time. And, you know, teenagers, the rise in anxiety and depression has been going up everywhere.
And yeah. I think overall they might be having an even harder time than adults.
Oh, yes.
But, I mean, it's hard to compare, but.
To be a teenager and never be able to get away from your family and go and hang out with your mates. Because that's what keeps you sane when you're a teenager, right? Because, you know, at least your mates understand what you're going through.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a nightmare. All right, completely understand that. And you know, there's, you know, and I personally think this was a big mistake. What was happening, at least initially, was schools were trying to replicate that structure using Zoom, using the online system, which is just a disaster, really stressful for the teachers, really stressful for the kids. And then you're bringing that environment into your house. Oh, you know. So, I think
much wrong with it in so many different ways.
And it's shown everybody the cracks in the way we live and the way we work and how unnatural it is. Yeah, I think, and that's been a big part of, I think, what musicians have been trying to capture, is that sense of personal, you know, dislocation, I suppose. Yeah, it's interesting because my therapist said to me, my counsellor said, no, because I have an anxiety disorder, I'm anxious all the time. All of his patients who have anxiety got less anxious, right, during that whole lockdown, because all of a sudden the world was in the same position we were. You know, we weren't misfits anymore. It was very interesting.
That is so interesting.
It wasn't really conscious, but.
It makes such sense, right? Because, I mean, that's what it felt like to me, suddenly everybody else is thinking about basically like existential questions around, you know, life and human relationships. And, you know, that's where I'm at all the time anyway. So it was like, here we are together. Well, let's talk about that. You know,
it was quite fascinating.
And I
think a lot of the songs that I've been hearing seem to come out of that. You know, I was listening to Josh Pike talking on the radio the other day, and he described a whole process of anxiety attacks and stuff that he went through. And I went, that's how it works for me too, right? And he articulated it beautifully because he's done a whole album recently, you know. So,
and when you say the radio, are you talking about actual terrestrial radio there in Australia, or radio online somewhere that we can refer people to, or?
Well, I personally do a lot of my research simply by leaving on an Australian public radio, digital radio station called Double J. So there's a public radio station sort of aimed at the youth called Triple J here. It's been around since the 90s and I've been listening to it very long. So Double J is kind of it's a kind of Triple J for people my age, right? Who, were experienced music in the 90s and stuff. Anyway, they're great and they do a whole bunch of really great programs about music.
Is it
And
Australia Broadcasting, or is it
yeah,
a
but
communication?
you can they've got an app. There's a Triple J app. It's Triple J, the word triple with J, and you can get it anywhere. So they broadcast everywhere. Harry Shearer, from The Simpsons, he listens to because she has an awesome music brain, apparently. But anyway, but they play a lot of new music, and so I find out a lot. I just leave the radio on, but I don't really know because I'm tuned into it now. Yeah, I can't listen to music with lyrics anymore without it just, leaping to my attention if it's
Did you
sounds
used to be
remotely
able to?
truthful.
Did you used to be able to listen to music with lyrics and have it be a background thing that didn't totally distract you?
Not very often. I'm
I've
kind of
never been
obsessed
able
with
to.
words, so yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I can't
I
even
mean,
carry on a conversation with somebody if there's music in the background with words, in English.
yeah. It's definitely gotten much worse since I started doing this project. But
You're just more attuned to it now.
yes. But when I was a student and I was doing like studying for exams or whatever, anything I had to concentrate on, I couldn't listen to music with words. I couldn't listen to music with lyrics. I would listen to like jazz or classical music. Instrumental music is fine. But yeah, if there's words, I want to listen to them. It's a side effect. I'm the same with reading. Like I can't not read a sign. I don't understand how people can look at a sign and not take in what it says, right? But it happens. I know it happens, but I don't understand that. I'm compulsive. So, yeah.
We were talking about all sort of different particular artists within the collection, but I guess I mean we clearly have plenty to go on for the next hour of conversation on Song News Network, but that could be the next time we talk about some of the particular artists that you've gotten a whole lot of stuff from, and what how you think they're particularly significant in the as artists.
I'd like to definitely. And I'm any for anybody out there, I don't know if anybody's out there or asked any questions or anything because
Yeah, because I
I'm
don't have that. I mean, for some
concentrating on
reason,
talking.
lately the comments aren't showing up when I'm broadcasting. We'll see all kinds of stuff on different platforms after we post it, but for whoever might be commenting out there, I'm sorry. I don't know. I can't see your comments, and I'm not sure why that hasn't been coming through over the past couple of weeks, but they're out there, and they're definitely watching, and we'll find out afterwards how many on which
I'll go
platforms.
and have a look later and follow up on anything I do that. I think it's, maybe that we should have a look at doing something according to themes because it is an overwhelming amount of information, and it's probably best to sort of maybe try and approach it from that sort of way. But today I just wanted to let people know it was there. And I think it's a way of just keeping in touch with what everybody's doing now, and it makes a huge difference. It makes a huge difference to my life to know all this stuff because it's out there, and that there are people out there articulating what we need. Yeah, I suppose.
And they should all plug into Song News Network so we can all kind of have a hub for this kind of activity.
Yes, and the website the includes lots of details on how to get in touch with either of us through the Song News Network or through Facebook or email. I like email, send me emails, but there's also a page where you can submit songs directly through the website as well. And their songs, tell me why they wrote the song for, what it's connected to. And so that I can put it in the collection, because, you know, I spend a lot of time looking for that sort of stuff, but I'm always going to miss things, you know.
And then if you're a songwriter, which is if a songwriter is sort of part of the collection and considered a contributor, which is not exactly like a, you know, too high a bar for this, but, you know, basically we're looking at songwriters that are good topical songwriters of some kind and have material to contribute about particular events, and then they can cross post in different forums so it's like it doesn't even need to all be curated by either of us. It can be, you know, mutually curated stuff too.
Well, you can post anything you like to the Facebook page. You can send me anything and I will pass it on. I'm you know, pretty responsive and all that sort of stuff. And I love finding new people whose brains I want to pick. So, you know, I'm always going to follow up. There is a list of our contributors on the website as well. At the moment, the ones that are up, like on the website, are all people who are still working musicians, and I wanted to get that up quickly because it's got links to everybody's Facebook pages and stuff like that. If you're looking for supporting, if you want to look for musicians to support in these tough times, or join the Patreon or whatever. They're all there, but I will get up all of our historical contributors as well. Yeah.
Excellent.
So yeah, it's not easy to find if you're in there, or let me know if there's someone that's not in that list that should be. I really would like to know about that too. I'm continually discovering. Just today, I've discovered a whole bunch of new musicians whose work needs to go into the collection. So. Yeah,
excellent.
All the time. All the time.
Great. Yeah. Anything else to add for our little introduction to the Song News Network?
No, I think we've done our hour.
I think it's been a pretty good pretty good bunch of introduction. Yeah.
I think so. I hope so. Yeah. I hope everybody's enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I hope so too.
Maybe and next time we do one, we'll take a bit more of a specific focus, and I will. I'm also planning on starting a newsletter, arrangement called Song News, because, you know, just as a way of letting people know that these events are coming up, because, you know, live stream events often you don't get too much notice and all that kind of stuff. I'd like to do a sort of upcoming events section and all that. You know, standard newsletter style thing.
So, I miss them. I know that I'm not the only one out there who misses being on a good curated newsletter, kind of weekly or monthly announcements list. You know, that there's nothing that has replaced.
In a lot of ways, that kind of email list is the best way to sort of maintain a community, like over time, I think so. You know, you'll be able to sign up for it, and I'm going to be very enthusiastic about lots of different things in it, so you'll find out what's going on. So
well, thanks everybody for tuning in to this little introduction to the Song News Network discussion between me, David Rovics, and Paula DeAngelis in Adelaide, Australia. Check out songnewsnetwork.org and see what we're talking about. And we'll talk to you again.
Yes, and if you have a question you really want to know the answer to, just get in touch with me afterwards. I'm on most of the media formats, like David is.
Brilliant.
All right.
Thanks, Paula.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon.